Okay. What would you like to hear?
Something about Baba, how he stirred your heart and made a potpourri of it or something like that.
I'll tell how I came to Baba.
Yeah, that's what we want to know.
Okay. In 1967, I lived in Chapel Hill, and it's really quite simple. A friend of mine said, Bob Underwood.
Oh, Bob Underwood.
Yeah. We've been friends for many years. And he said to me, there's a man by the name of Meher Baba, and he says that he is God. And he has a place at the beach. And it's $3 a night. You know? So I said, sure. And that was basically how it started.
But you should ask whether it is with food or not.
Right. Well, we have to cook. We have to cook our own.
Yeah, food,
that's okay.
Okay.
Right. It was still good. And
how much do you charge here?
Only $2.34.
Okay. Not on the beach.
But you are not on the beach. That's the difference.
Ocean 7.
A lot of sand.
Okay.
And I don't know, John, if this relates to you or not, but for many years, my struggle was that on the one hand, I felt very attracted to Baba, but with very, very little inner experience. And I had to accept that. And people had wonderful stories, and I would have like little glimmers every once in a while, and it was difficult. Hearing other people's stories, I would feel jealous and wonder about that. And the thought that occurred to me this morning in the samadhi was, you know, JFK's statement, ask not what you can do for your country, or what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. And the thought I had is, this is really, for me, the attitude I need to have to Baba, and which I've kind of come to over the years, is not feeling the need for experiences or whatever, but just doing what I can do independently on my own to try and feel Baba in my heart. And what I have also come to is that I've got to do that on my own, and no one can really do that for me. And the stories are wonderful, and I love them. But there's no advice or message that anyone can give to me that will remove my suffering or change my difficulties or whatever. I've got to go through it myself. It's my own path. So that's the story over the last 20, 21 years or whatever.
But then did you go to the beach?
Oh, yeah, I went to the beach. And it was wonderful. I remember Elizabeth met us and drove us around. We went to the barn, and it was very...
That was in 67.
This is in June of 67.
Mm.
We went to the barn and just stood silently in the barn. And it was very peaceful, very quiet, and very hot. And it felt wonderful. And then after several minutes, Elizabeth said, being very tactful, she said, I know you young boys, we were young back then, would be interested in going for a swim. And then came back to Chapel Hill, and there was tremendous excitement surrounding Baba. Started going to meetings, and that was a different time back then. And I really didn't get back to the center until 68. And in 68, started going on a fairly frequent basis. A lot of people were going to the center frequently for a few years in there. And met Kitty, the aunts, other people. And there were many wonderful times.
Did you go to 69 Darshan?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, during that period from 67 when you first sat down, and 69 was the darshan,
mm-hmm.
did you have any communication with Baba? Did you ever?
No, I was one of those ridiculous, obedient people. And I'll say that it was out of laziness or whatever, and I didn't. There was opportunity, but opportunity, I mean, you regret it more having missed it. You know what I'm saying?
Yes,
it,
I do.
There's a suffering of having missed the opportunity. Yeah. So I never did. In fact, I was very naive about everything, and I had signed up to go on Darshan, and then word came that Baba had dropped his body. And I didn't know. You know, I thought, well, maybe Darshan would be canceled. And the one thing that I wanted to be clear on is that we were having Darshan and not pilgrimage. And I remember at the time I asked Marshall about that, and he said, no, it is not pilgrimage, it is Darshan. And I went. And in fact, I think very, very few people changed their minds. I mean, once it was clear that it was still on, there was a tremendous drawing, and it was like, you know, back then you wouldn't miss it for the world. There was any way that you could possibly get over for it.
So you went, and so did you feel when you went you had darshan and not pilgrimage?
Yeah.
I mean, the implications of being an ascetic.
Yeah. I felt really for the first time in my life I was exposed to that, which I would call love. I mean, there were some moments that were very touching for me. And it didn't remove all the blocks that I still have and all the difficulties that I have to go through, but it was wonderful for what it was. So I've always, you know, I've always been delighted that I went, that I had the opportunity to go. And that was a great blessing for me. But I never have felt that people who came afterwards and didn't go, that in any way that it hindered them in any respect. There was a Darshan reunion at the center in 89, which was lovely. And the feeling that I had about that was it was just as open to people who were not there in 69, and it was just as much for them as
did you go out
in
89 to Murphy Beach?
He's talking about the reunion.
No, I went to the one in Berkeley.
And you said that it was the same, just as it was in 1969.
There was absolutely no sense of it being just for people who were there in 69. The 69 thing is in no sense a separation, in no sense a club, in no sense unique. And they had this at the center, and I know there was some talk, oh, this is just for the 69 Darshan people, whatever, but it wasn't. It was for everybody. And I felt that very much, and the people who were there felt that very much. It could not be otherwise. It was just a wonderful time at the center.
Hmm? Were you at 69 Darshan?
That's what he said. No. He was not there. That's the reason why we started telling
him. Yeah.
I'm so conscious about it because, I mean, I feel like, you know, it was my good fortune to be there, but what I'm trying to say is for people who were not there, it wasn't that they missed anything. It was... you know, because I've heard many people talk who I feel are very much closer to Baba than I have been who are not there.
Mm. That's
why did I go? Baba needed to have me there, maybe to open me up. Who knows? I needed to be there in some sense.
Good.
You want me to ask a question?
Okay, what is the question?
Okay, this came out of a really rough period that I had in my life, and I don't want to get into that personally, but a lot of people seem to say that, oh, now that you're with Baba, you're going to really begin to suffer. And when you're going through rough times in the way of the world, I've heard people say, oh, Baba's really socking it to you now, and Baba's really giving you a bad time. And I've gotten to the point where I don't like that, and I resent hearing that, and I don't think it's, I don't think it's appropriate. And I want to hear what people here think about this. I think that suffering in the world is your karmic burden, the suffering that you've gotten. And whether or not you're with Baba, you're going to go through that suffering anyway. And to make it quick, the suffering that Baba gives you is going to be the suffering that comes in your heart, the feeling of longing that you get, the feeling of having missed opportunities that you could have taken advantage of, the feelings of regret when you were disobedient, to what you feel Baba would have really wanted you to do, etc. And my thinking is that is the kind of suffering maybe that Baba gives us, but not, you know, if you're out of work and can't find a job or whatever you're going through, I mean, that's not because you're with Baba. But I hear people say that and blame Baba for that, and it just seems real. Have you heard these kinds of things before?
Yes.
He's really blameworthy. He's really blameworthy, that's what they say.
Yeah, but I don't... Yeah. So, what do you think?
I think that he is, in one sense. Because I'm well-placed in life, and then I had no notion of who Mer Baba is and all that sort of thing, and everything was so comfortable and fine, and all of a sudden, after having heard of him, heart having yearned for his love, having paid visit to the center, having paid visit to Mehrabad, Mehr Azal, and all that sort of thing, and then all of a sudden, after 2 or 3 years, life begins to become topsy-turvy. So what is it? Why is it like that? So they put the blame on Baba, naturally, that I've come to know about Baba, and that's the thing. Because they have heard from others also that, well, that's right. When we heard of Baba, we were all well off. Then all of a sudden, after it goes on, it's like, and then what Baba has said about it, you know that?
Yeah.
You haven't heard anything, what he said of this situation? Okay. What to do? Oh, my. I get. My library. See, my library consists of only. Read this.
Okay, this is taken from.
You know why the library is here consisting of only these things? Because these are frequent questions that arise, and the answers are there. You can just imagine how many times I must have been pestered with this question. So you are not the only one that you have heard like that. And what you feel is but natural that they speak in such language for our beloved Lord and all that. But he is indeed blameworthy. Why?
Because if you are feeling down because your life is filled with hardship, take heart from these two excerpts from Lord Meher. So these are written up in
Where are you going, Kalyan?
The bathroom?
Okay, okay. She's not pressed. Oh,
okay. The mayor of Karachi, Jamshed... Okay,
yeah, come on.
Go on.
Yeah.
The mayor of Karachi, Jamshed Mehta, again came to see Baba. He told Baba that he found himself surrounded by difficulties with no immediate solution. To console him, Baba explained, "That is not bad news. That is very good news. You are lucky to have so many hardships. The fact is, there are no hardships because everything in the world is one big zero. I see and experience this every moment. Once tested by the avatar or sadguru, the devotee will feel as if he is about to die. It is terrible. This path of God is the harshest and most insurmountable thing possible. Still, don't worry and don't lose hope. Good times are ahead, and after these difficulties, quietude and comfort await you. Terrible suffering is the sign of happiness and peace to come. Great heat denotes the coming of rain. Great suffering and intense sorrow indicate that happiness is about to dawn. Anything beyond your capacity will necessarily change your capacity. Because so long as everything is within your limits, you don't know what is beyond them. And everything concerning God and God realization is beyond limit. So in this way, great suffering and being plagued with terrible problems are beneficial. People pray to me to solve their difficulties, saying that they love me. But there is a vast difference between love and prayer. In Persian, to pray means to beg, to want, to desire something, even the blessings of God. But when a person really loves, he gives himself over to his beloved completely. This is true love. In that there is no begging, no wanting, and no room for desires. Only the longing to unite with the beloved remains. Love means the renunciation of the self. Prayer means selfishness, no matter how high the prayer may be. So there is a vast difference between when one prays and when one loves. On April 2nd, some of the Mandali complained to Baba, "Staying with you is nothing but harassment. Life is so full of hardships now. There is no other thought in our minds and hearts except death. We look happy to others. We eat and drink with everyone who comes. But who sees the dagger piercing our hearts?" In reply, Meher Baba explained, consoling them, "It is my grace. This is my real mercy which descends on a very, very select few. These are my friends. They are my lovers to whom I give the gift of sorrow and distress. It is a gift much greater than gold, of incalculable value, and not given to all. This gift is only for my beloved children. We masters can grant a world of gold, of happiness and prosperity to others by our blessings. But this rare and great gift of privations, troubles, and suffering is destined for only a few. So don't be anxious. Remember that I love most those whose hearts I pierce, and who through though their hearts are wounded, stay with me and stick to me through thick and thin. Were I to use my dagger on outsiders, they would not dare approach me. I keep them happy with praise and encouragement, so that they may be in my contact and gradually be fit to bow down to me in the real sense of the world. For my friends, I kill them, and it is my highest mercy on them. What is my mercy? What is my grace? It is your trouble and harassment." I don't know about all this.
It's only through suffering and through hardship that we begin to face Him. Otherwise, our backs are always turned towards Him. That's what He told us. And so, only two things can make you face Me. Face Me means He is the truth.
Yeah.
One is My grace. And another is I have to manhandle you.
The other is what?
Manhandling. He has to manhandle. Because He says that all that is, when your back is turned towards Me, you're playing with your own shadows, because I'm the sun. Have you ever had an experience with your back towards the sun? And what do you see in front of you? You get lost in your shadows, you know, you play about and you just walk about and put your hand up and down and this and that, and you're fascinated with your shadows. So that's when your back is towards Me, you get entangled, enticed by the Maya, by the illusion. So My grace in an instant can make you face Me. But it is not possible for all to have My grace. You have to deserve that grace. But it does happen. But then there is a possibility. I want all of you to face Me because I am the truth. So in one form or another, when I come in your midst and bring you the awareness, face me, then you will see the sun, nothing seems to happen. I give my sayings, I give my discourses. People, after I pass away from your midst physically, I make them read whatever I had said, and nothing seems to help them. So I have to manhandle them. And what's that manhandling? Just trying to turn you towards me. Yeah. Because your back is towards me, so I have to take your turn. Right. To turn you towards me and face me. And that you call is suffering and hardship. And without that, you do not have the grace of facing me. That's what he said. So only through suffering and hardship.
There's another dimension of what I hear in Ken's question is that a lot of us, and I'll say for myself, have thought the same way about, you know, Baba's giving me the suffering. Mm-hmm. But then over time, you start looking around more at the world and you start seeing that there's a tremendous amount of suffering. That it's not just Baba lovers who go through it, and that the intensity of people's
but
suffering.
But Baba is not just for those who love him, he's for all. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it is there. The manhandling is being done in the world that we see now. Time and again it has to do that. Mm-hmm. That's what is happening. Mm-hmm. What tremendous suffering is there to bring them that awareness. Mm-hmm. We are playing with the shadows. All that we need to do is to face the sun, the truth. That's all. Mm-hmm. It is true.
See, the difference is just knowing that we're being loved.
Hmm?
The difference, I think, being a Baba lover is knowing that when this is going on, that we're being loved.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And that is the difference. Otherwise, they suffer. Yeah, that's the thing.
That's the hard part to hold on to, I think. Yeah. And you know, too much talk about the suffering makes you think, oh, well, now that you're with Baba, all you're going to do is suffer. And yeah, no, that's what I want to get away from.
Yeah.
And there's kind of been a shift to that, of people talking about that a lot. Mm-hmm. So,